listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Let's go shopping for books today in this old bank building? Well, that's what it looks like on the outside. There are hundreds of thousands of books on the inside.
Well, I got a chicken in the back. You're good, that's good.
That's Richard Powell. He works here at the Last Bookstore, checking guests in, occasionally giving first-time visitors a walkthrough.
Well, the building's over 100 years old. It used to be a bank, so there's a real bank vault down there by the children's section with classic books, stuff that I read when I was small.
The Last Bookstore is located on Spring Street near Pershing Square in the heart of downtown Los Angeles. Even if you haven't been here, chances are it's popped up on your Instagram feed once or twice. People love to take pictures of its book-adorned archways and sculptures made of paperback novels. Back before the times of masks and social distancing, the shop would be packed on the daily with tourists and locals. And then, of course, came COVID-19.
When the store was closed, it was like a ghost town in here.
That is employee Tim Pronovost.
You miss the chatter and the people talking and everything.
But even as other indie shops warn customers that they're doomed to close, the Last Bookstore's fate is not as apocalyptic as the store's name suggests. KCRW's Jackie Sudley has the story.
After spending an hour or two in the Last Bookstore, swimming in a sea of new and used titles, you can see why people still come here at a time like this. Here's one local customer, Sachin Jain.
I think you do forget that you're in a pandemic because, you know, those of us who are readers, you get lost in a book. And so, you know, this is a place where you can come and take your intellectual curiosity and get lost.
The owner, Josh Spencer, is a bookworm too.
I just sort boxes of books. It's like Christmas every day. I never know what I'm going to get. You know, every day I learn something new and find books that I've never seen before. So it's really the best kind of job for someone with my personality.
Spencer suspects he's collected nearly 1 million books. But that's just a guess. It's hard to keep track, after all, when you've been at it for 20 years. Some books are stored in a warehouse downtown, others in an even larger warehouse in Northridge, and the rest are here at the Last Bookstore. About the name, by the way, it's hard to ignore the painful irony of calling your store the Last Bookstore, but in reality, Spencer named it back in 2007, way before the pandemic.
I've always been sort of into post-apocalyptic books and films and everything, so I was like, oh, we'll be the Last Bookstore, and I literally thought that I was opening a store just to have a store for the last few years that bookstores were able to exist. Thankfully, history has, you know, taken a turn where people prove to be more loyal to the paper book than previously thought.
Now, no amount of customer loyalty could stave off the financial threats of COVID-19. Yet, Spencer could be the poster child for remaining calm in a crisis. He's a roll with the punches kind of guy, which has helped him since the very start of his bookselling business.
Originally, I sold books online just for like 10 years or so before I ever opened a store, and that was done first in downtown in a loft. At the time, I was able to get a massive loft for really, really low rent.
When the lease for that space ended, his friend introduced him to a mysterious old abandoned bank building with no signage in sight. He couldn't resist. Fast forward 10 years, and Josh Spencer now co-owns the Last Bookstore with his wife, Jenna Spencer. Together, they've been treating the pandemic as somewhat of a creative opportunity.
We had to close, we ran out of money, we had to lay off most of our staff, and it was really tough and surprising. But we're also both very resilient people and creative people, so immediately we took on the challenge of, well, how can we survive this, and what can we do to still get books into people's hands?
Back in April, Jenna Spencer devised the idea that ultimately kept the Last Bookstore kicking. She decided to offer curated book bundles, more or less mini libraries based on customers' interests.
We're still doing that now, but that did really well in the beginning just because people were all stuck at home and they wanted books, and we basically were doing their shopping for them. You know, they would just tell us what they like, and then we would create a stack of books for them.
They've also been renting out their two-story bank vault-turned-bookstore for weddings, proposals, and other small-scale events after business hours. That's brought in some money, but not enough to bring them back to pre-pandemic earnings. Since March, they've lost two-thirds of their staff, majority of their sales, and their money-making weekends. But as you can hear in the tone of Josh Spencer's voice, he's yet to lose his cool.
I would say we're still overall losing money and creating more debt for ourselves. our sales are down 80%, so I don't want to downplay the direness of the situation. I'm just someone who, whenever anything negative or challenging comes my way, I tend to take it as in a positive spirit.
Spencer's energy is infectious. Between him, his wife Jenna, and their employees, no one on staff seems hopeless about the Last Bookstore's future. Thanks to their creative projects, benevolent landlord, and government business loans, the bookstore is safe for now. They let in about 50 people at a time, so long as they have their masks on, and the line's been out the door the past couple Saturdays. Spencer doesn't know if they'll make it through the pandemic, but unsurprisingly, he's made his peace with that.
Even if the Last Bookstore does fail, like, it's okay with me. I mean, it's been an awesome 10 years, and I'm glad that people enjoyed it, and I'm proud of what we created. Hopefully people will still continue to support us and keep us alive through, you know, going to our website and our web store and social media. But even if we can't make it through this, I'll know that we did our best, and that's good enough for me. I don't think everything has to last forever.
As you exit the bookstore, there's a sign above the doorframe that reads, "You are now re-entering the real world." And in times like these, it's nice to know the Lost Bookstore is still here, offering plenty of ways to avoid reality. For KCRW, I'm Jackie Sedley.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Big night last night for the LA Dodgers, who were a big hit.
And he pulls one into right center. Back at the track, at the wall, is gone. Bellinger.
Outfielder Cody Bellinger with a zinger in the bottom of the fourth in the first game of the World Series. They went on to win the game 8-3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. It was a home game for the boys in blue, but not at Dodger Stadium. All that was happening at Dodger Stadium were fans in their cars watching the game on big screens in the parking lot. No, all of the games of this World Series are being played at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. This is right in between Dallas and Fort Worth. It's the home field for the Texas Rangers, but Major League Baseball trying to keep everybody in a bubble to not spread the coronavirus. Unlike Dodger Stadium, Globe Life is also allowing fans in the stands. Not very many, but a few, about 10, 12,000. Not cardboard cutouts, real-life peanut-crunching, cap-wearing baseball fans. You hear the seventh-inning stretch there. One die-hard Dodger fan who was there last night is Alex Soto. He's the co-founder of a Dodgers fan club called Pantone 294, and I'll let him explain exactly what that means, because he joins us right now from Texas. Hey, Alex.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, you're in a group called Pantone 294. Why is it called that, and how are you guys Dodger fans?
So the group started 10 years ago. We actually started going to San Francisco to watch the Dodger game. It was September 12, 2009. 56 friends and family members went up north to see the Dodger game. And then it became a yearly tradition. You know, we went in 2010, 2011, 2012. But around 2013, there was like the social media world where Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it was kind of popping. And we decided to, you know, let's make a name out of ourselves. You know, so we wanted to come up with a unique name. We didn't want no crew name, army, gangster type of name, right? We wanted something symbolic that would represent Dodger fans, right? So people talk about Dodger Blue, Dodger Blue, Dodger Blue. Well, I'm a graphic designer. What is Dodger Blue? So there was this one day I was taking a shower, and I needed a new hat. I usually wear my fitted Dodger Blue hat, and I kept thinking, oh, Dodger Blue, I wonder what color Dodger Blue is. So it kind of just hit me. I got out of the shower. I didn't even wash my hair. Walked out, Googled what's the official color of the Dodgers, and it was Pantone 294. So what Pantone 294 is, for example, let's say you want to paint your house Dodger Blue. You go to Home Depot. You know, you have to pick a color. And the machine gives it. The official color of the Dodgers is 294. So Pantone 294 kind of just stuck. I created a quick logo and the rest is history.
And you were in the stands last night in Texas. Obviously, you know, you were watching some great stuff. How did it feel?
It felt great. I was here for the NLCS game too, and it was 80-20 Braves fans. It was crazy, right? Yesterday, I want to say it was 90-10 Dodger fans. The whole stadium was Dodgered out. I actually saw more Texas Rangers fans than actual Rays fans. I probably saw like two. It felt great, you know, with everything going on, COVID and us not being able to go to Dodger Stadium or travel to go see the Dodgers. Seeing a game live, it felt good. It's something that we all needed.
I mentioned at the outset that only a fraction of the number of fans in the stands were allowed in. I think it was around 11,000. What were the precautions taken over there, the coronavirus precautions?
I felt that when we went in there, obviously they make you wear a mask. Every time you're in your seat, you're only allowed to take your mask off if you're eating, if you're drinking. There's sanitizers all over the stadium. I felt safe. All the seats are, you know, spread out every 6-10 feet. So I felt comfortable.
Did you buy yourself some peanuts and Cracker Jack? Were you able to do that at concessions?
No. You know what? I did buy a beer. There is no peanuts. I did buy nachos. I want to say that half of the concession stands are kind of closed. So in order for you to get a hot dog or just nachos, it took a while. Luckily, it's a new stadium, so there's a lot of quick accesses. Like, for example, I saw a restroom every 20 feet. So it's a new stadium. It's amazing. But no, I am having seats today.
You're having seats today?
No, I'm sorry. Sunflower seats. I'm going to have some sunflower seats. You know, usually.
Oh, seeds. Game, seeds. Sunflower seeds. Okay. All right.
Sunflower seeds.
You mentioned that you were there for the NLCS, right?
Correct.
Are you planning on staying for the entire World Series? And by the way, you know, how are you living off your trust fund?
I have a nice 401k. I think I have a good job where my company's paying for this for the entire trip. It's work. You know, I'm trying to get content. I'm trying to get photos. I'm trying to gather people around. So it's work related. I did book a one-way trip. I don't know when I'm going back. My objective or the goal is to go back home with the championship, even if it's game 4, 5, 6, or 7. I hope they sweep. If we win today, I think the series is over. But if they end up losing one game, let it be one game, and let's win it in game 5. Game 5 would be my birthday, so it would be nice if October 25th is remembered in Dodger history for a very long time.
You guys travel a lot for Pantone 294, right? I mean, you go from state. So this is nothing new for you. You follow the Dodgers at away games a lot during the season.
Correct. If it wasn't for COVID in 2020, we had planned 17 trips. We were going to go to New York. We were going to go to Houston, Minnesota, Kansas City, Chicago, Milwaukee, San Francisco, Arizona, and the list goes on and on. I believe it was 17 trips we had planned. And every trip, we averaged anywhere between 500 and 2,000 people per trip. And that consists of us getting planes, hotels, game tickets, group activities, boat parties, and all that fun stuff. But because of COVID, we didn't do any trips. In fact, this was the first year we were going to do a trip, a non-Dodger trip. And we had tickets to the opening day, Angels versus Astros. We had 4,000 tickets ready to go. We were going to be loud. We were going to cheer. We were going to boo the Astros. But unfortunately, because of COVID, we weren't able to go.
Have you traveled at all during the pandemic, or is this your first time out?
Actually, I was quarantined for the first 6 months. I did not leave my house. I didn't leave my room. I was in my house the whole time. I didn't go out, not once. I wouldn't even go to a grocery store. I would have people deliver food. Luckily, I was stocked on food and water. But I did take a trip to Mexico. I want to say maybe 2 months ago, it was like, you know what? I just need to get out of LA. Usually, I travel twice a month. And being stuck in the house for 6 months, it got to me. So I took a weekend trip. It's just me and my friend. Just need to get out and get some air and came back and straight to work.
If the Dodgers do go all the way, fingers crossed, Alex, is this one of those seasons where it's like if they win the World Series, but it was a shortened season, 60 games? Is there like an asterisk? Does it make it any less?
No. If the Astros don't have an asterisk on their championship, you can't take that away from us. This is a legit championship, just like the Lakers, right? The Lakers were in a bubble. couldn't see their family, everything that the players are going through just to win this championship, it's probably going to be one of the hardest World Series to win, not because it's a short season, but with everything that the players had to endure during this whole process, it's going to count. I hope no one takes it away from us if we win. I feel that if they want to put an asterisk to it, the Astros better have one too.
You're, of course, talking about the Houston Astros, the cheating scandal, the trash can banging, and the sign stealing. And
you forgot the buzzers, too. The buzzer, right? The buzzer that Altuve.
And the buzzers, too. That's right. Well, the Astros aren't in it. The Dodgers are in it this year in the World Series, and they've already won Game 1. They're playing tonight as well. Alex Soto, the co-founder of the L.A. Dodgers fan club, Pantone 294. Thank you so much, Alex. Go Dodgers.
Thanks for having me. Go Dodgers.
Let's go Dodgers. Let's go Dodgers.
COVID-19 pandemic has thrown everything into chaos, especially schools. In Los Angeles and a lot of other places, distance learning has been the new norm, and that's made it even harder for some students who were already falling behind in the curriculum. Well, the tutors are here to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, have a little help. All I need is my brother.
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
They are students helping students by offering tutoring sessions, all free of charge. Annette Yuen is a junior at Irvine High School, and she started offering free English conversation sessions to students struggling in language classes. Eventually, she founded the nonprofit Girls Empowering Girls, which is now part of Study Smart Youth Services. Hey, Annette.
Hello.
And Emmy Schaefer is senior at the Buckley School. And in the spring, she, along with some friends, founded the nonprofit called Tutor Together. Emmy, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm going to start with you, Emmy. Tell us about why you wanted to start this program called Tutor Together.
Yeah, so when the pandemic hit, I learned of a lot of low-income families who, you know, their students weren't receiving enough FaceTime with teacher, if any, for that matter. And they were receiving insufficient, like, packets to complete within the span of a month. And I really just thought that's no way to learn. And I value my education so much, and I didn't want others' education to be at risk due to the pandemic. So I founded Tutor Together to help promote educational equity and just to make sure that students weren't falling behind due to the pandemic.
How many tutors do you have altogether, and how many students are you tutoring?
So we have 60 tutors altogether. I started out with just, you know, like 10 of my friends tutoring, and we've grown to 60, and we tutor over 600 students internationally.
Annette, I want to talk about Girls Empowering Girls. It's a little different, right? It's not exactly just tutoring. What are you guys focused on, and why did you choose to start it?
Yeah, so I personally, before the pandemic hit, I used to travel a lot, and I have a lot of relatives, specifically in China. And so when I visited them, I had met a lot of students who were learning the English language, but they felt like very uncomfortable with conversing in English. And so it gave me the idea to provide a source of English learning to anyone who is in need. And so while the quarantine hit, I felt personally that I was lacking human connection. And so I really decided to put the idea into action. And so we tutor all ages from anywhere who are having trouble with their English skills. And so we have a lot of students in China right now, but I am looking for students in Germany, and I have one student there already.
So you created this nonprofit organization, right? Girls Empowering Girls. How did it start? Because now it's part of a broader program called Study Smart Youth Services, right?
Yeah. So initially, we started running as an independent program. However, I reached out to a couple of other tutoring programs in my area, and we decided to pull our resources together and merge into one organization. And I think it was a really good move because it allowed us to better serve our community and share experiences with each other.
I know you guys are doing this free of charge, but I also know that, you know, you're teenagers. When I was a teenager, I was trying to make some extra money in high school to pay for my car. I mean, I was working at a seafood restaurant, you know, peeling shrimp. I mean, I would do anything to try and make some extra money, but you're doing all this for free. This is like your spare time that you're doing things for free. How does that affect you, do you think? I mean, why was it important that you made these sessions for free? Annette, let's start with you.
Yeah, personally, I don't think that any of our tutors are actually in it for any like monetary gain. I think our purpose was to make connections and serve the community. But I think a lot of our tutors handle it. We are actually really flexible with our schedules. So if there's anything that the students or tutors need to do, we are really good with rescheduling and making sure that everyone has time and is handling everything really well, especially in this time with quarantine and school. It's really different and difficult for a lot of tutors, especially here. So yeah, we try to make everything flexible.
Amy, what about you? Why was it important to you that the Tutor Together is free?
Our target demographic is low-income families who don't have the resources or access to additional help. And I have always been cognizant of the privilege that I've had in life. If I ever need to text a math tutor, I can so easily do that. And I think that's a huge advantage that I have. And so I wanted to promote equity and level the playing field because I don't think socioeconomic status should be a determining factor of academic success.
I mean, obviously it is. Unfortunately, right. It's one of the sad realities, certainly that we're seeing during this pandemic. And you know, I know a lot of folks are feeling pretty helpless during this time and have been for much of this year. Is doing this, you know, this higher calling, I don't want to be one of those people who are like, how do you feel about this? But I mean, how does it make you feel about yourselves, Emmy?
I mean, one of the biggest aspects I've noticed is one of the reasons I started to tutor together was because of my love of curiosity. And I just wanted to help students embrace their own curiosity. And I'm seeing that session by session, students becoming more interested and asking more questions. And that's honestly so rewarding because I get to instill in them exactly why I started Tutor Together. And then also just hearing emotional feedback from parents who are going through really difficult times, whether it's a single mother who works all day or a family of, I don't know, six kids who don't have equal access to the internet. Just hearing the messages from them about how we've supported them during this time, I think makes everything worth it.
Annette?
Yeah, I think for me personally, like the title or our name really ties into the whole thing, Girls Empowering Girls. I wanted to focus on the female population because I wanted to show them, encourage them that they can do anything really. And I think it's like vital that women around the world know that they're powerful. And even just helping a few girls be a little bit more confident with their conversations and their skills in talking in a different language means it has a really big impact to me.
It's certainly very important. I just want to thank you both for doing such great work and helping the community and helping people all around the world. It's an inspiring story for young people and older people alike. So thank you for joining us today. Emmy Schaefer, senior at the Buckley School in Sherman Oaks, founder of Tutor Together. Annette Yuen, who's the founder of Girls Empowering Girls, part of the Study Smart Youth Services Program. She's a junior over at Irvine High School. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Think about the impact that they make day in and day out. Think of the impact that you can make as well. In whatever you do. And one of the things that you can choose to do today for the community is giving to this radio station, because when you hear stories like that, it's important to know what's going on in your community. And we're in the final stretch of KCRW's virtually non-interrupting Power in Numbers drive. I get this all the time. People are like, wait, you guys are having a fundraiser? What's going on? I don't even hear it. And it's like, yeah, we're not saying it as often as perhaps some other stations do, but we're in the final week of doing it. to get the money that we need, require to operate this radio station. Count yourself in our Power in Numbers drive at kcrw.com/give. You know, community is about sharing and providing vital resources to help everyone thrive. So count yourself in, kcrw.com/give. That's going to do it for us today on Greater LA. I encourage you to check out our website as well while you're at the KCRW website. It's kcrw.com/greater LA. Check us out. Subscribe to the podcast too while you're there at our website, kcrw.com/greater LA. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamat, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Amy Todd, Jody Adler, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this show today. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time. Have a good night.